Hi, I'm Gary Lactus, and welcome to Silence, number 315. Silence, the top sports podcast. And I'm absolutely delighted today to have top sportsman, The Beast Must Die, with me. The Beast Must Die, hello.
Hello, I'm here fresh from the field of my sport, ball kicking, the kicking. Or is it the hitting ball? The ball hitting. I'm here from the top of the ball hitting league where I belong.
Absolutely, yes. And of course, we're delighted to have you here to talk about your ball hitting. How many balls do you hit on an average day as a professional ball hitter?
Well, it depends. I guess it depends, really. It depends on how I'm playing, but also about how the other team is playing. So if my team, the Stripes, if they're doing well, then that's a good sign. But what about if the Spots are doing really well? I don't know. It's very much a game of two halves and two teams. On average, I'd say somewhere between 8 and 60 balls I hit, probably. In an average match.
Yeah. Well, this is such a fascinating insight, and we're so lucky to have you.
Yes, you are.
Do you have any interests outside of ball hitting?
Not really. I know some of my fellow ball hitters read, but I think reading is for wimps. And it's boring reading, isn't it? It's really boring. So, no, not really. No,
yeah. Personally, I like to have pictures with my,
what?
With my words.
But you can't. Reading is words.
Well, it can be pictures too, surely.
How?
What about comics, for instance?
Oh, comics. That sounds like a fun and interesting diversion from when I'm tired from ball hitting.
Yes. You should try it sometime. Have you ever read any comics?
It turns out, thinking about it and looking at the massive wall of comics and books next to me, I think I actually have. Now I'm thinking about it. I'm just looking, and I do think I have read some. Yes. Yes, comics. I know what you're talking about now, comics. Yes.
Good. Well, maybe we should follow this diversion. And also abandon the stupid concept that I presented you with without warning at the top of the show.
It's fine. I thought I handled it like an absolute ball-hitting pro.
I tell you what, I threw you the ball and you did not drop it.
No, I hit it.
How about that? You hit it.
Right out of the park.
I hit it back. And we had a wonderful volley there.
I hit it right out of the park, but you luckily were out of the park already, so you could hit it back into the park. And then we had a massive park-sized volley. It was really good.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was in a separate park.
Yeah.
Because you're so good. We're both so good at it.
Yeah, exactly. We are. It's true. We're both really good. You know what else we're really good at? Podcasting. That's why.
Absolutely.
That's why you're listening to Silence, the
hot shit,
the weekly,
the hottest shit around,
weekly hot shit, weekly podcast where we give you all the up to date comics news. We review this week's new releases, and we talk about industry gossip and anything big happening in related media like computer games. RPGs,
toys.
Puzzles, toys, dressing up, It's a special dressing up that people do. Yeah. And all that stuff.
Being tired.
Being tired.
Yeah, we talk about being tired.
This is the top being tired podcast. Actually, it's probably not. It's one of the top.
It's absolutely not at all. Parenting hell, isn't there?
They just nailed being tired. Yeah.
Yeah.
Spinning gold.
Yes, one of those.
From tiredness.
Yes, one of those podcasts where you listen to perfectly successful people moan.
there's loads of those. The one thing that lockdown did is it made sure every stand-up comedian in Britain had a podcast, which was good because I think we all agree that what you need from stand-up comedians is more of their opinions. So it's good that has happened. And if you go across the pond, don't worry, they're all at it as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the world is all the better for it.
Yes.
I mean, I genuinely listen to some of those.
I listen to loads of them.
Yeah.
I listen to podcasts.
They're good. They're good company. Like, you know, that's what it is.
I don't know.
I'll probably come to that when I start to talk about the comic that I have read.
Yeah, I think they are good company. I'm beginning to worry that I've become sort of a bit like with most things in modern life. I just feel like I may have become too attached to like the solace of having just someone babbling away in my ear. And it's weird. Like I realize that sometimes I'll be doing like menial tasks while my daughter is, you know, eating her breakfast or whatever. And I've just got like a podcast on in my ear, just listening to it. And I can still hold a conversation because I know the drill with the podcast. And I know, you know, it's like, I'm listening. It's very important because it's just, you know, some two guys talking about some films that I've seen. And, but yeah, it's funny. I was like, oh yeah, this is weird. This is one of those weird moments of modern life where I'm like, in the future, you'll have a little pod in your ear where you'll just be listening to two people talk constantly. And I know, you know, we've always had the radio on and stuff. It's not like, but it's a bit different, isn't it? Where it's just for you, just in your head.
Yeah.
And sometimes my wife will be listening to hers as well. And it's like, you know, you could just.
Radio feels magic now because of it.
Well, sort of.
It's like, what? This is on the same time as. other people are listening to exactly the same thing at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
This is what an incredible novelty.
Yeah.
Rather than just having, like, you know, the choice of thousands of things to listen to and not enough time to listen to them all. And, you know.
My wife went out this morning and she put the radio on to, like, BBC Six, which we just sometimes have on. Not, you know. Exclusively, but just because it's, what a surprise, that's the one that we put on. The Radio 2 of our generation. It was just on in the day, and because I was working from home and I was upstairs doing stuff. I'd just come down, and it was just on in the living room, in the kitchen. And I quite like that. It's just like sometimes you walk in, there's just a bit of babble and music. But it is hilarious, just how, I don't know, yeah. There's lots to laugh at with BBC Six. But one around sort of tea time came down and I heard Steve Lamack. And Steve Lamack was just doing what he's always done, which is boring on about some not very interesting new music. But, you know, in a way that makes you can't really hate him because he just seems to genuinely love it. And I remembered that, like, I don't know when it was, but there was a couple of months or so ago where I noticed that there was just a lot of, like, Steve Lamack's final show after 20 years, the evening session. Steve Lamack is giving it. And it was all very dramatic. Like, Steve Lamack is leaving the evening session. And I was like, all right, I suppose that is quite a big deal. He has done that on, you know, one way or another on BBC Radio 1 in the 90s and blah, 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 doing his thing. And then it was like, he's moving to the 5 to 7 slot. actually had a whole
to get to bed a bit earlier.
They had a whole day of, like, you know, goodbye to Steve as well. Like, loads of people reminiscing about the evening session. It's just like, he's going to literally go 2 hours earlier and do the exact same show. Maybe just with a bit more drive time quiz action. I don't know. It was very funny. It made me laugh. I still, like, listen to him going, yeah, what a sad day that was when he moved 2 hours earlier.
Yeah, different, a very different type of banter with the audience.
Oh, God, you know. The 5 to 7 crew, my God, they're totally different.
So if you're driving in your car, let us know where you're driving to.
Going to pick up the kids, almost certainly.
On the Twitter, we've got, hi, Steve. I'm driving to Eastbourne. Great.
This is the other thing.
I've seen Blur in Eastbourne.
This is the thing about the BBC Six as well, is that it's still perceived to be, like, you know, people who think that they're still cool and into cool music. But the demographic, much like comics, the demographic is just aging, and there's no new listeners. There's no young people aren't listening to BBC Six. They're not like, oh, let me see. Wonder what Guy Garvey's playing on Sunday afternoon. Can't wait to hear what Craig Charles is playing. You know, the young people are not listening to that. So it's just the same people who were listening to it 20 years ago now. And so it really has turned into, like, it used to be, like, you'd listen to it and it'd be like, well, what are you up to tonight? And the people would write in, I'm going to see Sebado at the Garage, or I'm off to see, you know, Nick Cave at the blah, blah, blah. And now it's like, I'm painting my spare room. And yeah. I've got a hip operation I'm going to, so this is going to keep me company during the hip operation or whatever. And it's just really funny, just like really, 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 like, pedestrian sort of middle-aged events.
Just, yeah, like,
being soundtracked by whatever extremely mediocre
and
music
still and being, also yeah. Like, still going to see the same band.
Oh yeah, still, like, going to see, like,
so excited to see Mickey Berenyi from Lush tonight.
Yeah
doing a solo acoustic set or whatever.
Like, I've noticed as well, like, when I go and see bands now, it's divided sharply into two things. It's like noise gigs that basically Lord Nuneaton Savage invites me to, where he's playing at them. And then I get to see some weird, squonky stuff that, like, I don't know anything about. And it's just, I'm usually quite drunk, and it's lots of fun. Or I'm just literally on the sort of, I don't know, like, what's it called? The circuit, you know, the sort of revival circuit. And I am going to see it. I'm like, oh, cool. You know, like some
legacy bands. Yeah.
And it'll just be like, I routinely, like, get really excited if I see something like, I don't know, some ancient hip-hop group. Oh, the Souls of Mischief are coming. And it's just, yeah, you're going to see some 55-year-old men rapping with a bunch of 55-year-old men in the audience. I'm not 55. I'm a young Turk. But, yeah.
This perfectly describes my gig-going experience over the last 5 years as well. Where I've been to 4 gigs, I think 4 gigs in probably like 6 or 7 years. Julian Cope, Cud, and Lord Nuneaton Savage, Mighty Lord ML Death Man, and you know, etc.
And
with Alex Fitch, Saw, Howl Around, and a bunch of other stuff with Steve Davis, snooker champion, on DJ.
On the ones,
you know,
and twos.
Lots of tape experiments. Stuff. You know, met DJ Food briefly. You know, he was a nice chap. He's called Ian, I think. He ended up buying some of my comics off me.
That's nice. Yeah, I always liked DJ Food.
That, that remix he did of David Byrne.
That's very good.
Fuzzy Freaky. It's absolutely fantastic. I was
always
that
thought
recently.
That it's a shame David Byrne didn't, like, hook up with some more, like, it felt like he had an opportunity to sort of work with, and he didn't really do that. I mean, he's done lots of plenty interesting things, but it's like, it worked really well. It was like a real good evolution of the sort of weirder end of Talking Heads, you know, like the sort of more like electric guitar, you know, Fear of Music style, that that kind of it felt like, oh yeah, he could do this really wiry electronica and bits and bobs. It would work really well. Yeah, no, I go and see the thing I go and see most is actually Luke Haynes with the Hitsville Boys. And quite a few times where we've gone to see Luke Haynes, it's been a precursor to us just hanging out with each other. You know, like, it's lovely to see him, but it is just like, it's like you've got your duty. Your duty is to go and see Luke do his thing. And then it's like, and then it's just get pissed with the Hitsville Boys. But it's like, it's really funny. It's just like, it's like a yearly event. Oh, he's got a new album out. Yeah, great. Go and see him. Wicked. Just watching the crowd age up with me is just like, because as well with that sort of Britpop stuff, there were people like, we were sort of actually teenagers, but there were people obviously who were in their 20s during that scene. And so those guys are all like, they're like, well, they're getting on a bit now. Like, we're getting on a bit, but they're really getting on a bit. Anyway, so there we go. That's our podcast. We've described exactly what our podcast is, I think, perfectly.
Yeah. Sport gigs.
And everything to do with pop culture.
Who'd have thought that our heyday was the 90s?
Yeah, it's really...
We came of age weird, during the 90s.
We don't seem like that at all. We don't. We seem really... seem much younger than that.
what's left? We need to talk about top crumpets.
What? Restricted to comics or just all crumpets?
No, just all crumpets. All right, who's your favourite out of Steps? Girls Only. Come on, Lee or H.
Ooh,
you've got to choose one.
Well,
I'm going Lisa because I want to be a bit left field.
I was going to say Lisa because I've met her, and she. Well, when I say met her, I mean she. I was flyering in Brighton once for my night, and she came up with her hunky beau and asked me directions or asked me where some recommended. You know, like probably. I think I basically recommended she go to Waikiki Mukau for a vegetarian burger. And she was really nice and smiley. And I remember like looking at her being like, you really are exactly like you look like on the telly. Like sometimes people have that weird, slightly, they look like more than they, you know, they look like a lot in real life, or they look too small, or they just, but I was like, no, yeah, you seem exactly the same. And you've got a good face for telly. I see it now because you're a big, smiley, nice person. And she seemed nice. Mm. She just seemed nice. And so she's Lisa.
That's lovely to hear.
Claire seems like she might be, a bit hard work. Faye, I don't know.
What about Faye?
Faye sort of, I don't know. She sort of looked like a drawing of a good-looking person, but not actually. If she sort of glitched when you were talking to her, like Max Headroom.
Quite aloof.
A bit aloof, yes. Too good for her. Yeah. You think you're better than me? That's what you want to say to Faye, isn't it? Think you're better than me? Now we're moving off girls from Stets. H or Lee?
It's got to be H, hasn't it?
I think it has got to be.
Lee was in that program about the about old boy band members. Old, like pop stars getting together and forming a new boy band.
That was one of the saddest, most depressing things that has ever been broadcast. It was not.
Yeah, it was Channel 4 Sunday morning hangover TV, wasn't it?
I thought it was an ITV one. Maybe there was more than one. There probably was more than one, actually. There was, I think I'm thinking of one where it had a variety of teeny bopper stars kind of doing the same thing, but it wasn't a boy band because I think there was like some people from Atomic Kitten or something like that in there as well, or Wanna Bewitched. But that was really, there was very disheartening. disheartening. Right.
Oh, there was one that was definitely all boys. It had one out of the one with the very wide mouth out from of five. New Kids on the Block.
Oh, right. Oh, it was Transatlantic.
Yeah. I'm sure it had someone out of five.
I know.
Danny with his big wide mouth. We can have lots of fun.
In the New Kids, it was Danny.
Step one.
We can have
lots of fun with his big wide
mouth. He had a big wide like mouth. Yeah, he did. He sort of looked a bit like Seinfeld.
Yeah.
New Kids.
Yeah.
New Kids, they were like, they were trouble. They were bad news, you know. Whew.
Well, they were just, you couldn't, you could try, but you couldn't stop them hanging tough, could you? And that, I think that was ultimately their downfall.
I mean,
they should have hung soft a bit.
There's a Wahlberg in there, and that means that, well, there is genuinely some, you think you're better than me? There is a lot of that with Wahlbergs, because they're actual Bostonians, and Boston's all about you think you're better than me. That's the whole vibe of Boston, as far as I understand it. I was trying to watch some thriller the other day that was all set in Boston. I just couldn't handle it. Everyone was being far too like, hey, you think you're better than me? I was just like, I can't take this. It's like, and every actor was obviously like, finally, I get to do my Boston accent, which is that really kind of, if Good Will Hunting basically is the kind of Boston acting film du jour. And it's just, you can tell young actors are just like, great, I get to flex my Boston accent, and I star in a film about guys who just love brawling. I just kind of couldn't hack it. I had to turn it off. So this is good. I think we're covering quite a lot of ground in our return to weekly podcasting.
Yeah fantastic. Don't get the dear listeners' hopes up.
Their hopes have been dashed.
Return to weekly podcasting business.
Well, it's just a return to weekly as in the same
it's
way.
It's weekly
that
for us because we have weekly been doing Dan and Fraser's Starlight Adventures, of course,
yes.
Which I've got three that I've yet to edit. Haven't had much time because I've been concentrating on my Patreon, which I might as well mention.
Why not?
Patreon.com/FraserGeesin, where I've been creating pretty much weekly content. I've almost finished. I'm working on the last page or so of Jeff and Elon.
Ooh, last page.
The story of Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk as neighbours who they hate each other at first, and they're in lots of competition. Anyway, it's fucking insane, and I'm enjoying shitting it out for 22 people. Actually, no, David out. Lovely illogical volume joined
this
week, and him became the 23rd paid
23
Patreon member. Yeah,
can't stop noticing those, can you? Once you see him,
yeah. Yeah, I was listening to Cosmic Trigger at the time as well.
Who reads Cosmic
Robert
Trigger?
Robert Anton Wilson. What?
Who reads it?
Who reads it? Oh, some guy.
Is it good?
It's not him.
Is it good? Because I think
it does the job. He can't. I mean, he doesn't know how to pronounce nomic. He says gnomic.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting some because I remember reading those and loving them, but I was like, I just don't think I've got the time to plow through them, but I was thinking like listening to them might be quite good.
Well, I've never read them, so
right, it's good stuff. Yeah. I don't know, like I remember it blowing my mind, like how insightful and clever he was at a certain age, and I don't think that would change necessarily, but I know that a lot more has happened to me in between then and now, so that's always interesting.
Well, there are bits in Cosmic Trigger 2 where he's talking about virtual reality and the internet. And the guy who reads it's got a voice sort of like this.
Yeah.
Kind of a New York voice. And it's perfectly fine. It does the job.
Yeah, yeah, sort of functional functional audiobook guy.
Yeah. That seems a bit like a lot of the predictions, you know, all this sort of doubling of information stuff, you know, as ever, anything sort of futurological,
yeah, it's
always wrong.
Well, it's
pretty much
it's why, you know, a sci-fi writer, I know, no, he's not a sci-fi writer, he's a sort of predictive, like you say, he's like futurological writer or whatever, but someone like Philip K. Dick will have resonances that continue because he never tried to sort of actually like talk about it in a, like, it'll be this way. But you have something like Ubik where some of the ideas just resonate because they feel very like things that have come to pass, but it's not just, he doesn't, he keeps it very, I don't know, not poetic, but just sort of undefined, but the concepts of it are really sort of, are really there. Like, so there's all sorts of things like in his books that just go, oh, right, that's very like meme culture, or that's very like, you know, that's very like social media, but it's not at all kind of envisioned as that. It just sort of happens to sort of sum it up. It's really interesting.
Mm.
Yeah, it's one of the things I think is very, I would never feel comfortable writing pure sci-fi for that very reason, because I think my concept, my visualization of future stuff is incredibly limited. In fact, it's incredibly retroactive and goes much more backwards into, like, you know, if I draw a spaceship in something, it's usually a flying saucer. Like, it's just, yeah, like, yeah, that's what a spaceship
looks like. Yeah, likewise. I've been in Jeff and Elon, I've been drawing like a rocket that's, you know, it's pretty much the rocket out of Tintin. You know, it's that basic rocket. Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, the classic.
Spaceship.
Cigar shaped with special fins on it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm doing that. And I'm doing, I'm regularly doing the Fraser Gieson Parasocial Unspectacular there. The podcast, which is working out what it is. And what it seems to be at the moment is documenting my trips to Aldi in Port Slade. I'll do a little review afterwards. But I think it's actually more interesting than that. But it's hard to describe in what way. But anyway,
I think that's sort of the future of it, to be honest with you. I mean, this is the future of it. It's this sort of like, micro.
Speaking of the future.
Yeah, I think there's more meat on those bones than just going, let's host another podcast about, you know, discussing comics, for example. Not that there are that. I don't think there are even that many comics podcasts. I think it's something that's quite hard to. Once you basically go, what's your favourite comics and what's your all-time top favourite comics? It's just quite hard to do week on week or month on month or whatever. Like, and it's hard to talk about comics sometimes. It's such a visual thing. And it is, as we've discovered, very hard. If someone hasn't read the comic, or if the person listening hasn't got it in front of them, it's just quite tough.
It's very easy for self-doubt to creep in, isn't it?
Not for us, but for, like, for other people.
Why am I talking about this? Like, what did I think about it? I can't remember. I liked it. It was good. You know.
Yeah. Or I liked it, but I didn't finish it, which is more my things now.
Yeah. My favourite, I liked it. It was shit.
I liked it. It was shit. Yes. But, Gary Lactus, we have read comics and... I have seen some comics-related film stuff. So there is stuff for us to talk about. There isn't just us musing on how pointless a podcast is to record. There, as well as all the industry gossip and news we're going to work through, and our reviews of the latest game shit and stuff that...
And toys.
Toys, all the best new toys. And we'll do our unboxing and we'll all that stuff. But as well as that, we can actually talk about some stuff, can't we?
We can.
Should we?
but the Beast Must Die. Where can we do that?
Hold on.
If only there was a place we could go to.
What's that over there? Oh, look, over there. It's over there. And that, quite far away, but it's glowing slightly. Come on, hold my hand.
The starlight. Oh no, that's
over there. No, that's over there. Look, the starlight thing's over there. No, I'm not over there. It's sort of it's glowing, but it looks a bit mildewed. Should we? Come on, hold my hand. Come on, let's walk.
That sounds like something we should stick our head in.
Yeah, let's walk over to it. Hold on, let's walk over to it. There we go.
Speaking of mildew, we had a mould specialist come round today to Look at the mould in our son's bedroom.
Ah, wicked.
Wonderful,
that's the best.
Wonderful times.
That's the best place it could be in your child's bedroom.
I'm going to say this as a PSA. Apparently, mould loves bleach.
Ah. Oh,
well. And we've been bleaching it loads. So, yeah, white spirit vinegar.
Oh, well, that is...
Is yeah. better for it.
That's...
so
that's,
there we go.
Yeah. Do you remember when you lived in that shared flat in Brighton, the first one, the flat you just played GoldenEye and Risk in? And
yes.
It was before you moved to 187. And
wonderful, thick, furry, luxurious, multicoloured mould.
I believe it was my fellow Mindless Ones, Adam, a.k.a. Zom. He had a literal whole sort of wall, like a sort of blooming tree-shaped mould going up his wall. Like, really, like in a way that only a foolish, 19 or 20-something would think, yeah, I just can live with that. Like, it was massive.
So before we stick our head in the mildew, I just want to relate. This has just reminded me of something. He was in his final year at university. He'd done one of his final exams. He'd been up all night revising. He went and did his exam. He came home to this disgusting flat. I was like, I'm just going to go to bed now. So he went to bed in his damp room. Wow, Adam, he's really been crushing it. We're going to be quiet. We're going to let him sleep. And at that, literally 5 minutes after he'd shut his door, the Salvation Army band started playing beneath our window. This fucking brass band. Just went on and on and on, and I'm not sure I've ever felt for anyone quite as much as I felt for him that day.
Oh my god!
It's comically bad.
That's like the bit of the Naked Gun or something, isn't it? Where Nordberg, the baddie or whatever, gets it just keeps getting run over by various things, and finally, a marching band just goes over it. Full marching band. Really funny. I must watch.
It would have been great if they were marching.
Right, yeah, but no, they were
literally
just
they
outside.
Were just, it was like they were busking.
Yeah. God, life's great sometimes. It really is amazing how it pans out. Yeah. Right.
But anyway, the mildewed shining hole.
Let's put our heads in this mildewed shining hole. I feel like in order to get us in there, we should probably sing something. I don't know. Let's see if something comes to mind, shall we?
Come with us to Review Universe with Gary and the Beast and you.
So my daughter is sometimes, often, still awake now when I record these. And I think I always say to her, I'm going to speak to Gary Lactis on the phone now. So, no coming in and interrupting. And then she just hears me singing stuff like that. And she thinks, she must be like, oh, come on. Surely I can go in. It's just special singing going on.
But surely that's the most wonderful lullaby.
But I've sort of intoned to her like there's serious grown-up talk going on. right, so the Review Universe. Now, Gary Lactis, I got very excited when you said you'd read a comic. How are you feeling about talking about said a comic?
I probably can do it. It's
such a... If I was the dear listener now, I'd be like, really? You probably can? You're not
someone,
sure.
Someone said the Silence podcast was a good comics podcast.
This guy Tam recommended it to me. He's apparently one of the two listeners.
What is Steps?
These assholes spent 45 minutes discussing boy bands? What? One star.
What is this ball hitting? Is this some British sport? I like British sports.
One yes, star.
Okay, so what's my way into this? Okay, yes, much as, you know, celebrities have taken over the bestseller list with Richard Osman and his, what was it, Thursday Murder Club or whatever.
Yeah.
And like David Walliams taking over the world of children's books in a way that isn't always welcomed by professional children's authors. Here we have, this put me in a dilemma because I love comics, right? Comics is my world, as is podcasts and comedy. Not so much nowadays because, of course, due to commitments, I am no longer a stand-up comedian and can no longer be funny. But I got Joe Wilkinson, My Autobiography, which is illustrated by Henry Packer. And this is a comic. It's like it doesn't want to say that it's a comic.
Yeah.
Joe Wilkinson, My Autobiography, illustrated by Henry Packer. It's very sort of Henry Packer has a kind of a Far Side, like a sort of Larson style. And the sense of humour is quite similar. So it's lots of different. It's sort of vaguely themed around various chapters.
Yeah.
This is me, early years, the world of work, dating scene, the Richard Branson incident, hard times, crime doesn't pay, giving something back, experiencing other cultures. So it's kind of like a sketch show.
Just looking, it's quite hard to find the actual art. When you look it up, they do not want to show you that it's a comic anywhere. I've got the cover, but I'm trying to sort of see what the art style looks like. But if you put Joe Wilkinson comic, then it's like, yes, he is a comic.
Yeah. It doesn't make it easy. If you look at Henry Packer's art,
yeah,
then you'll get he's also. Right, so I bought this because Three Bean Salad, which is Henry Packer, he's a stand-up as well,
yeah.
And he's part of Three Bean Salad, and I love Three Bean Salad, and I'm also quite fond of Chatterbix, which is David Earl and Joe Wilkinson, and so it's like these two of my sort of mainstay humorous podcast input, although Chatterbix isn't really humorous. I don't know what it is. It's just like they just do stuff. It's just fucking company.
It's just on. So it's daily, isn't it? So
yeah, it used to be. Yeah, it's just three days a week now. But it'll just be stuff like David Earl gets into metal detecting,
right?
And it's on the table. And like a lot of the time, like there was one the other day that was just David Earl driving round Ditchling and places north of Brighton to places where he used to do his gardening round, and there was practically no signal, so it was just like the signal was just breaking up constantly. And I don't know, it just makes me feel better about this podcast.
Yeah.
You know, and anything we record, you know, apart from anything else. But anyway, I enjoy them. I enjoy Joe Wilkinson. I enjoy Henry Packer. And it's a decent, funny book. I didn't come away with it changed, but I'd certainly had an amusing time reading it. It's just like, you know, it's got a bunch of like single panel things. Like there's I started up a buffet style
hat shop, and there's a sign saying, wear as many hats as you want for £5. And there's just a guy coming out with, like, you know, sort of a 10-metre stack of hats on his head. And Joe Wilkinson in the window, and closed permanently, looking really pissed off. It's a good, funny book. And, you know, there's kind of not that much of that.
But it's interesting because it used to happen more often. Like, I picked up something in a charity shop the other day, which was the, Gary Letts is just showing me. Oh, yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. This is him. This is when he was a stuntman, and he's a stunt bike. He says he never mastered the landing. And so he goes up the ramp and he just keeps going. And he keeps going. You see him pass over Paris, and eventually you see him go past the white cliffs of Dover, and then he's going like, "Who are you? I'm the new stuntman. What do you expect? You were gone for 3 months," and he's like, "He's still flying. You never see him land." It's good. It tickled me. One thing I would say. Is that the presentation of it? It's a big sort of hardback book. I'm going to give it a knock now. It doesn't necessarily warrant this level of presentation.
Yeah, it's a bit more. Is it a bit more sort of in the spirit of a zine or something?
Yeah, yeah. I think it should have been. It feels like it needs to be more floppy and disposable. But I dropped this on my foot just before we started recording, and like, I can still feel it. Yeah. I think I've actually quite hurt my foot, and it didn't need to hurt my foot. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
What else? I mean, I'm not sure what else I can say about it.
Well, it's just I was going to say to you, like, you were saying you don't really see these things, because I think it did used to be the case that comedians would have these sort of things. Out, you know what I mean? Like, as in the Goon Show would have like illustrated scripts, or there'd be like a Monty Python book or something. And like, comedians now feel the need, I think, to sort of either like do a biography or like a self-help book of sorts, you know, a funny self-help book. But I quite like the link to an actual, you know, like comics, because there is a bit of a line between comedians and comics. There's like a bunch of weird stuff, like Lenny Henry did that thing, The Big Woof, which was this kind of weird book he did with Steve Parkhouse, which is like great. Yes, if you want Steve Parkhouse.
I understand. Like, Douglas Noble tells me it's much better than it, you know.
Yeah, it's better than it has any right to be, and it looks beautiful. It's some of like Steve Parkhouse, because he's obviously Steve Parkhouse is like, this is it, I'm working with Lenny Henry, I'm gonna be big time, baby. Penguin's publishing it, and it's like, yeah. And then you got like, what's his name? Alexei Sayle did that Jeffrey the Happy Tube Train or whatever it was with Oscar Zarate. And then I picked this up the other day. It's weird that you mentioned, because in the charity shop, I got the Spitting Image, the giant comic book with a K.
Oh.
And I was like, I remember this knocking around in like the shops and being a bit like, yeah, but it's not a comic. And like, looking at it now, it's like it 100% is a comic. It's just got loads and loads of comics. And it's like, not only that, there's like a Transformers piss take that's drawn by Lee Sullivan, and a Judge Dredd piss take that's drawn by Brett Ewins, and Steve Dillon's in here, and all sorts of people. Like, there's a bunch of, like, along with, you know, David Leitch, people like that, you know, some of these more. It's just really interesting because it's like, it's very dated. It's all loads of Spitting Image, which for any American listener or non-English or non-1980s born UK listener, was a parodic show with puppets that was sort of satirizing
latex
stuff.
Latex caricature.
Yeah, puppets. Caricature puppets. That was kind of the news of the day skewered, and it was very irreverent and rude and anarchic. And I, as a child, I thought it was like immensely funny and brilliant and taboo busting.
Yeah, yeah. It's where I got any and all my political awareness.
Yeah, totally.
From,
yeah,
really.
Yeah. It was the Thatcher's era, and so there was like, you had Thatcher at the centre of this. They did a kind of brilliant, like, red-eyed terrifying Thatcher that was kind of inspired. And this is like, so it's, this comic is completely dated. There's loads of jokes about things that have got long gone. And so it's a curio more than anything, but it's that thing where, you know, comedians were sort of like, right, there's a way to into this market really with comics. And actually that loads of effort was put into this being an actual good comic. It wasn't just like, you know, like when Ricky Gervais does something and it's just like, yes, a terrible children's book or whatever, like, you know, drawn like really shittily, because it doesn't matter what the drawings are like, because Ricky Gervais is the most important thing, you know. And it's just like, yeah, so I respect Joe Wilkinson for sort of carrying on that tradition a little bit of, you know, yeah, actually trying
and,
to...
And
yeah.
I think Henry Packer really, like, I think illustrated by Henry Packer is not, you know... Like there, it's an equal.
It's as much his thing, yeah.
And the whole thing is sort of structured like, it is structured like a sort of stand-up hour.
Mm.
You know, you get callbacks, and you get you get a denouement of sorts. And yeah, you get themes running through it as well. Particularly there's a joke early on that just about how his areola are very wide. They're so wide that they actually overlap, and they're like a Venn diagram. And just occasionally throughout, like, you know, you'll see him topless, and he's got these massive nipples that sort of overlap like a Venn diagram, and it's. It's always fun when you go, oh, yeah, yeah, that's good. So it's like this, there's this sort of, there's a very sort of comic book attention to continuity, as well as the sort of like throwaway sort of segmented nature of a sort of a stand-up of a stand-up special, I suppose you would call them now. Although I don't like calling things a special because it just sounds fucking stupid.
Special,
a special, and at the end there's some fun. Oh, they've got some bloopers at the end as well.
Right,
they revisit some of the bits, but things have gone wrong or differently, and yeah, like. Yeah, if it was a paper, honestly, I just don't think it needs to be a hardback.
Yeah, yeah.
but there we go. It probably won't make a paperback, but yeah. So that's it, really. It's kind of all I've got to say about it.
No, sounds cool. I had seen it, and I had sort of done that kind of about it. You know, not sure what that is, but. I do like Joe Wilkinson, and I like the drawing on the front. It is quite sort of
If I wasn't aware of Henry Packer and I'd seen that, I would have been quite sniffy about it. I think. But yeah, no, it's good. If you like amusing things,
yeah,
then that will yeah. It won't change your life.
I don't like amusing things. I only like serious things.
What
revisionist?
Well, tell me
comics.
About something you like. Tell me something you really, really. Fucking grown up.
I thought I'd talk about Grant Morrison again. No, I'm not going to talk about Grant Morrison. no, so I've had a funny diversion in comics reading where I tracked down a bunch of these collections of ElfQuest, right? Which
right.
guess who publishes these? It's Titan Editions, which is the main reason that I've gone, because in my ongoing quest to kind of track down all these editions from my golden era. But it was also that
I have a Titan question.
Yeah.
What's your cutoff point?
It's probably somewhere around, like, so they started doing after the kind of core 2000 AD collections, after those albums stopped, which I think the final one is The Dead Man, I think, potentially, or something like Road Troopers Future Wars or something like that. Anyway, so when those European album collections stopped being published, they did do some ones where it's like The Complete Cursed Earth and The Complete Oz. And I'm like, they're not in the same trade dress, but they are still kind of nice. I haven't got those. And I sometimes look at them, I'm like, but you have got the Cursed Earth, like, already. And it's like, I know, but... So I'm fighting with myself there, but no further than that, really. No further than that. So probably about 93, 94 would be my cutoff. Ideally, 92.
Right.
As late as it goes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Don't want you fancy.
Fairly
new.
Predictable there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Carry on.
Yeah. So ElfQuest also was one of those things where when we were getting into comics, it was like, there were these ones that were like, okay, you're into your superhero comics or you're into your Transformers and you're into 2000 AD and stuff. And it's like, and then there's also these other things. There's like, you know, Robert Crumb and there's, you know, Chester Brown. And, you know, there's those kind of pervy guys and they do adult comics. And but then you had things like Love and Rockets and Cerebus and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and, you know what I mean? Like these kind of hallmarks of other independent comics that were quite big, or something like Gru, or, you know, where it's like, that's another thing that you can sort of get lots of. And ElfQuest was always one of those things where it's like, yeah, ElfQuest is one of those. It's quite a sort of big, big deal. But I remember looking at it and being like, I mean, it looks like it whiffs to me. I'm not a huge sort of high fantasy fan. And I think I described it to you as there's something about reading. So ElfQuest is done by a couple, Wendy and Richard Peeny. It was started in the 70s. And it was started in the 70s and self-published late 70s. And it's very much kind of, they are,
you know, they had a kid called Teeny Weeny Peeny.
Yeah, he was Teeny Weeny Peeny. And then Dean and Jean Peen. they were there. So they sort of self-published, then it was picked up. They published it for quite a long time themselves, and then it was picked up by, I think, Epic for a bit. And it's had various publishers, but fundamentally it is a self-publishing success story. And at its peak, like a lot of these things, it sold an absolute shed ton. And it is very much the product of 70s high fantasy, like that sort of 70s Tolkien kind of dorm weed smoking, like, yeah, man, like, you know, Ralph Bakshi. It's very much in that wheelhouse.
Early D&D.
Yeah, very much. And you know that they're the product of that very, like, small but dedicated sort of scene before it got trendy, where it was like, I bet going to like some of those conventions in the 70s was probably, you know, Harlan Ellison would have been there for sure, you know, there, but it would have been very, like, a lot of patchouli and just very beardy fantasy. And I get the feeling that Wendy and Richard are probably quite sort of hippie-ish in their outlook. But always been interested by it. And the other thing to say about ElfQuest is that obviously the main elves themselves have these strange, like, massive heads, big eyes, and very toned, muscly little bodies. And the women are sort of petite and have, like, cleavage and stuff. So it's all very, like, there is definitely a sort of, I don't want to say sexual element to it, but there is a sort of sexualized element to them. But not in a kind of kinky, pervy way. Nothing that makes you go, this is all a bit weird. It's sort of wholesome, but nonetheless, it makes you feel like, if I was reading this on a train, people might be like side-eyeing me, being like, what's that pedo handbook that he's got there?
There is something
like
some repressed nerd,
sort of. But what's interesting about it, I think, is that it's all drawn by Wendy Peeny, and she is actually, like, one of the, like, probably one of the, like, unsung comic artists, like, as in her actual line work and page work and the construction of these comic pages, like, they're really cool. Like, it's really, really cool looking. And these kind of editions, which, like, reprint the black and white comics with these nice color, modern colors, kind of really make it pop. But they are, and kind of reading it, it's actually really kind of engaging, because it's very, like, earnest and non, there's nothing like winky or nudgy, or like, it's very like a straight up story about these elves that are kind of, you know, displaced, and they're trying to find their way essentially home and blah, blah, and there's trolls in it and wolves and all sorts of things. And it's got like a really like very fleshed out, worked out kind of cosmology and a real sort of commitment to this long form quest storyline. And it's kind of written pretty well. Like it's sort of, I mean, it is that kind of slightly whiffy art, like fantasy stuff that I don't really dig. It's just not my thing. All this kind of, Snaggletooth of the Wolf Riders, you know, what beholds
funny, silly
us.
Names.
Yeah, silly names. But, you know, I did grow up watching Willow and Bakshi's Lord of the Rings. And, you know, I have got it in me to like fantasy. There is a part of me that I can still get a bit lost in it. And it is interesting because actually the thing is it is good. It is a good comic. It is actually decent. It's quite absorbing. The art's beautiful, but there is just these constant moments where you're like, this is a weird looking thing, isn't it? But it's also like there's a sort of feminine energy to it that stops it being, I think, creepy. I just think there is something about the fact that she's kind of bringing this to the table that isn't, like, if this was the product of a guy who, when you looked at him, you're like, oh, yes, a giant baby man did this, he'd be, like, a little worried. And there are these kind of characters who've done comics where, you know, they're sort of, yeah, they're sort of somewhat troubling in what they're actually kind of getting at. But it is funny to have this feeling of, like, even, like, having these books lying around, I'm like, there is something very funny looking about them. But I think she's genius. I think she is a genius draftsman. I think she's like Dave Sim. Right. She's really like unsung because I think fashion and stuff has just moved on completely from that. And even in the introductions, they do like there's these introductions that various like people write, like Len Wein and, you know, Gene DeWolf, various sort of sci-fi fantasy writers and stuff. And they're sort of acknowledging that there's a sort of the fan base to ElfQuest was always like really ardent but a bit hidden because people felt it was a bit dorky and you weren't allowed to say you're into it, but like so it had this sort of slightly hidden fan base, but actually people who are into it. And like there's like this woman writes really well about how like as a teenage girl she just was like absolutely loved it. It was just for her. It was felt like it was written entirely for her. And I was like, it really sort of cast it in an interesting light. If you go, oh right, yeah, I see, it's sort of like the evolution of some of this, yeah, these sort of, I guess, female slanting fantastical stuff. And also just nice to read something where it's like it's not dripping in testosterone as well. But it is kind of cool and really great, but also it is, there is something about it. Whereas if someone goes, what's that? And you go, well, it's called ElfQuest. But I suppose it's, if people read like, chibi manga or whatever it is, you know, whatever, I don't know the various manga forms, but there's the stuff where it's all like very like big eye sort of, I don't know, slightly infantilized children adults,
I guess
it's not so dissimilar from that.
I guess that is something that will always rear its head in anything that requires like being on your own obsessively trying to do something,
yeah,
you know, when you don't actually have time for a real life, you know, things, odd repressions will creep in. I'm happy that you enjoyed it. Actually, I was always curious. I liked the way it looked as a kid, and I was attracted to it because I did have like a period of a few years where I was like, you know, I'd buy White Dwarf and I'd. And I'd paint miniatures, but I never had time for, like, you know,
the actual games,
rules of, and you know, and all of that. But I really liked the idea of fantasy, mostly aesthetically. I picked up an ElfQuest, or someone gave it to me. But it was like one issue,
yeah.
And I was like, it's like halfway,
yeah, yeah. Like what's going on? No idea. Yeah, yeah.
And the scope of it kind of put me off.
Yeah.
And, but you did make me think that there is definitely an art to funny, silly fantasy names. You can really, really get it wrong and it can be completely confusing. Or you can, like Bilbo, you know, that's quite good. Mm. If you can do it in a sort of Dickens way and have names that are, like, you know, made of sounds that are truly evocative.
Mm.
Or you can have, like, some... I can't remember what it was. I was reading some old... I was sort of skim reading some old fantasy comic piece of crap. Some sort of self-published fan type thing off some internet archive. And it was, I mean, it was just, it was the sort of thing that, you know, that I've taken the piss out of.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
before, you know, in my time of crowns,
yeah.
octodecology, you know, and that we've, in an old episode of Silence, we, in a delirious state at Thought Bubble, were like laughing about.
Yeah, whilst being seated opposite these very serious fantasy mages who were trying to flog their like complicated fantasy game that they'd created, and they kept just sort of really uproariously laughing as they had a spirited game of this kind of fucking nonsense. And it was just a dad and his kids, and he was dressed as a full mage, and it was a whole window into
I mean, really,
dads can ruin everything.
Like, we weren't parents at that time as well. And no. As time passes, it was weird.
Yeah, it was definitely weird.
But so those collections, you feel like, you know, you've got a grasp on the story. I mean, it never ended, did it?
No, it did. This was the thing I was going to say. So quite recently it came to an end.
I knew it came back.
It was kind of Quest's End or something. And I read this like newspaper thing where it was just an interview with Wendy and Richard. And it was just, you know, it was very much a kind of like, you know, these local fantasy artists sort of thing have after, like, and I think it's after like 40 years or whatever, it's finally come to an end or something. I think it's 40. It would have been in, yeah, 40. And I just thought, like, it's in some ways, you know, I bet it had its kind of hardcore little fan base still reading and stuff. And they would have celebrated it. But it is funny, isn't it, that you can go from being like one of the named, like, there was a time where I suppose the comic world was small enough in terms of, like, a lot of things, really, that with the monoculture, but there was only, like, you could go into a comic shop in like 1986 and go, right, so what is there? There's these superhero ones that are really good. So there's, like, you know, Perez and whatever, Teen Titans, or there's Frank Miller doing this, or if you like John Byrne, there's some of that. So if you want, you can get that stuff. But then if you don't want that, you've got like the Hernandez brothers doing Love and Rockets. You've got Mr. X. You've got, you know, Howard Chaykin off doing America. You know, there was a set probably number of things that you could like tick off. Grendel, you know, boom, 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 and come out with your kind of, I've got all of the stuff. And ElfQuest was one of those. It was like, it had its own t-shirts. It was like, it had its own collections. It had like, it was name-checked in that way. And I know that's a simplification that actually, if you dig in, it's like, no, of course there were just billions of comics that always happened. But not. I don't think there's the same thing now. I don't think you go like, if I walked into a comic shop and said, what are the top 10 independent comics? Like, it's not like someone being able to reel off just like, yeah, you go, boom, 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 these ones. That's your lot.
No, well, you would be met with the answer, what do you mean by independent?
Yeah,
I mean, what's the definition
like,
of...
What kind of thing do you like? Because I can find you literally anything that like could play to your particular tastes, and that's a good thing, but it's sort of a shame in some ways where people, you know, I sort of think at that about like Cerebus, the way that its legacy is so tarnished, but partly by a couple of things, obviously by Dave Simness, don't need to rake those coals over again, But second of all, it's very hard to get hold of. Thirdly, it's a very, very, very long form, continuous story. And fourthly, that, you know, that I suppose it's completely out of step with contemporary tastes. But there was a time when he was like one of the top comics creators in the world, like by none. You know, he was not only because he was one of the best draftsmen, but he was also like this paragon of independent publishing and a real success story and a real inspiration to other people. And he would sort of boost the whole idea that you could do it yourself and all this stuff. Like that Cerebus was like, you know, and now it's like loads of people would just be like, what is that? And he'd be like, oh, you know, Cerebus the Art. And they'd be like, sounds awful. Where can I get it? It's like, you can't.
Have you read Tom Ewing's writings on the Cerebus collections that he?
No, I love Tom
finished,
Ewing.
Finished, I think.
I love Tom Ewing.
Yeah, so. I think he's gone through them all and done it.
Good. Yeah. Okay, I will check that out.
That's worth a look.
Yeah,
not that I've read them because I've never read enough Cerebus to for it to mean anything to me.
No, it's. I remember picking up random issues. And it being the most impenetrable thing that I'd ever like, I don't even know. And it is like full of impenetrable stuff. It's full of in jokes and starts off as a parody, changes and stuff. But when you get into it, it's like phenomenal. You just kind of can't believe how well written it is and stuff. So until he goes mad, and then it gets harder to read because it's just like a lot of people's when their madness in their madness period. You know, it's like lots of people. Again, to come back to Philip K. Dick, I mean, they are his best books where he has his temporal lobe epilepsy or whatever it is that happens to him, or the pink laser light hits him from Valis.
The pink light, yeah.
They are his best books, but they are undeniably harder to read than some of his earlier ones, where it's like, yeah, he's a bit more, yeah. Arguably Grant Morrison as well, you could say. It's all a bit better before he has his special enlightenment visitation in Kathmandu. It's like, oh, I know, but I really like those ones where you hadn't had enlightenment. Just a miserable 80s bloke.
Yes.
So I don't have any more comics to talk about. I have got something else to talk about, but I haven't got comics to talk about.
I haven't read all of it, but on my comics Patreon, patreon.com/FraserGeeson, stupid name, I know, it should be Gary Lactus, ridiculous. Mr. Tom Rolland gave me an email address and said, you should send some stuff to Viz. I'd never submitted to Viz.
No.
Because I always assumed it was a closed shop.
Yeah, absolutely.
But apparently it wasn't. And I mentioned to some friends that I was like, oh, well, I'm going to submit something to Viz. Well, first, I sent them some stuff I'd done. And they got back to me and said, yeah, we can't publish anything that's, you know, been like even self-published or even on a blog or whatever social media before. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do something for them then. And I spoke to some people and they pointed me at the Awesome Comics podcast where the editors were actually interviewed and were like, yeah, no, we like, you know, a lot of people send us stuff and they can draw, but like maybe they can't write. And also, like, we love people sending us stuff, so we can say no. It's like, right, okay, yeah, I'm going to give it a go. And so I gave it a go, and they said yes. This raised many chuckles in the office, and then they. And so, yeah, so basically I've got a sort of half, well, two-thirds of a page thing in Viz. I'm going to try and get more in, dear listener. And, yes, it was an interesting experience. They came back to me with a lot of changes, and because I'm trying to impress, I made I made all of those changes, and it is in Viz now. It's called Knights of the Realm. Pop Knights of the Realm. They changed it too. And yeah, no, it's sort of in the end, because it was, I spent a lot of time drawing it, and then I spent a lot of time redrawing it with their changes. It did work out at less than I was making as a cleaner in 2005 per hour. But who knows? Maybe in the future I will earning as much as I was earning as a cleaner in 2012. Who knows? But it is out there, and if you want to see it, Viz is Viz, isn't it, really? What can you say about Viz? It's one of the two shops still open in the UK, where you can like see comics, and by and large the text bits are better. But I mean, what a fantastic thing to still exist, and it always cheers me when someone shares a picture of David Bowie on a train laughing at a copy of Viz in the late 80s.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's great that you're in Viz.
And it is good. Another thing that's good about it is like Barney Farmer, who is great, like his stuff is in there, and I like the circularity of like when you and me were in Gutted.
Yes.
In 94, I think it was. And there was Barney Farmer's self-drawn Stickman, the Saint's Dad, and all of that stuff, which long-time listeners will remember from, before Silence 100, we were talking about and tracked him down.
Yeah.
Nice that we're in the same comic again.
Yeah.
Albeit, one I have yet to be paid. I have sent in my my details. I've filled in my form. I don't know when I will get my £112.50. But yes, there we go. If ever there was a reason, if ever you were thinking, maybe I won't join the Fraser Giessen Patreon. Maybe he isn't a proper comics artist. I am definitely a proper comics artist.
Yeah, exactly. You're legit.
And it was really the nicest thing about it was I got first of all I got a message off someone on Blue Sky who is a subscriber, and subscribers get theirs first. So, oh, you've got a comic in here. Yes. Oh, there it is. And I saw a copy of it. And then Tam, the wonderful Tam, he was off on a hiking holiday, and he'd bought a Viz for the train journey, and to sort of keep him company.
I
love that idea, like hiking around the Lake District you're going to be doing a lot of hiking, and you're going to be very tired, and at some point, I think having a Viz in your backpack is a really good thing to have. It's a
brilliant thing to have. Yeah. Such a dense read, like loads.
Yes.
Loads to it there.
Yeah. And he said, oh, I've seen your comic in there. It's very good. Oh, that's lovely. And so I knew it was out. And I was at, a sort of National Trust place. We got back, and I took my son to the local Sainsbury's, and I picked up that, and he picked up a Lego comic. And we didn't buy anything else. We went to a local shop and bought a comic each.
Aww.
And went home. And he had his comic, and I had my comic. And it was a lovely, lovely feeling that because one day that will be impossible, probably, the way things are going. And but I had that experience, and that was lovely.
I yeah, I love the fact that you're in Viz, and I like you say, I love the circularity of it, and I think it's also like really like genuinely thrilling that that it seemed like it kind of just worked out in that way where you're like, oh, I'll submit to them, and like you just imagine that you'll just like hear nothing. And they're like, no, yeah, this is great. Yeah, we don't want that, but send us something else. And then, yeah, no, we really like this. We want to use it. And go through the, like you say, the editorial side of it, which is, you know, part of life. We you and I as self-publishers have never been edited. So, I just love the fact that it actually paid off, and I think it's wicked. And I think also the strip's really good. Like your original version was better, but the one that's published is still really good. And I get it. I think some of the decisions they've made, they kind of know their audience a bit, perhaps, and they're just like, yeah, you know, this is really funny.
Yeah, but absolutely. I can completely understand why they've made those changes.
Yeah, and
it's fine.
And I think it's as you say. Like I love the idea of Viz still existing, and I think it is one of those things like Private Eye and the Beat. Well, that's the you know. I guess the Beano, but you know, this idea that these things, this institution still being there, Viz, you know, is a genuine like British institution. It's not translated globally, but it's heyday. It sold absolutely shitloads, and you can still get it in pretty much every newsagent. Like every, you know, it's not hard to find. Mm. It's not some sort of fetish object. It's like, yeah, it's Viz. Like people still probably buy Viz just who don't have any other interest in comics. And that's cool. Yeah, it's really cool. It's funny when you said about Tam on his like hike, it's like lovely, like going back in time with his like hiking holiday and his copy of Viz in his backpack. and I remember like taking a copy of Deadline on third year camp when we were like third year camp, which is year nine nowadays, third year. We went to Birmingham. For like the residential camp where you basically just go and I don't know, it's an excuse for like teenagers to finger each other. I can't think seems to be the general feeling of what it's for. But it was, you know, a good fun. I remember like having lots of fun on the third year camp, as in like, you know, you're just away from school and your teachers are sort of a little bit less. But I remember having this copy of Deadline, which was right deep in their kind of summer of love period. Post Ewins and Dylan, and it had like Booger on the cover drawn by Jamie Hewlett, and it just seemed really cool. And I remember having this, and it got so beaten up, still got that copy, and it got handed round. People were like reading it and just being like, because it was just, it looked good, it looked funny, and it looked cool. And I just loved having that like one comic with me that like literally got passed round various people, because no one was looking at their phones or anything. It was just like there's nothing else to do. Sometimes we sit around and it's like, can I have a look at that? And it's like, yeah, I just loved it. That's still one of my prized comics, that probably for that reason.
I have a similar experience, same year, third year, skiing holiday.
Yeah.
Skiing holiday, going to wherever it was, Austria, I think. And I had the collected Electra Assassin.
Oh yeah,
with me, and just like reading that, and that got passed around as well. And so like I can't read or think about Electra Assassin.
Yeah.
Without actually just thinking about a time of my life in Austria with, like, you know, they got vending machines with booze in. And, and you're young. And our friend Big Toby mucking about in one of the hotel rooms, like putting the furniture into and like turning it sort of like into a mad assault course, and him going, look at this stunt, and I still to this day don't know what stunt he was going to do, because he leapt over this chair that was in a door frame, smacked his head on a door frame, and just collapsed on the floor. In absolute agony. And yeah, and that's Electra Assassin for me.
Yeah, basically. I think it would be quite nice to, like, yeah, do a history of your life in actual single issues or volume. You know what I mean? Like, sort of document it that way, where it's like it's actually about the. I think Simon Russell did something actually. I think he did a little zine that was about sort of more or less about that. It was about, you know, the experience, because I have this really vivid memory of reading the issues of Transformers UK weekly comic when the Time Wars storyline, where Megatron and Galvatron existed in the same timeline, and it was ripping reality apart, and then there's this huge cataclysm. I mean, it's not that huge, it seemed like it at the time, but there's this cataclysmic war with all the Autobots and Decepticons getting trashed, and they team up and they're still getting trashed. Anyway, it's very dramatic. It's one of the most dramatic comics when you're like 10 that you could read. And I have a vivid memory of lying on the floor in my bedroom listening to the Pet Shop Boys introspective album. And there's quite a lot of drama in the Pet Shop Boys. It's like sort of along with all the sort of camp house music energy of it all, there's this kind of pithy stuff, but there's also like real drama, like, and I remember like I cannot read those comics without hearing the Pet Shop Boys. I just can't. It is like indelibly tied to it, and if I listen to the Pet Shop Boys, there's a certain track where I just cannot not think about Galvatron like ripping the chest of some Autobot open and like snarling, and me being like, oh my god, this is so serious. And it's just,
it's a nice circularity there with Neil Tennant having worked
for Marvel
in the
UK.
Early 80s, yeah, yeah. At Marvel UK.
I think he was projecting to me, because I Pet Shop Boys was probably the first like band where I think I felt a real like, yeah, I felt a real like not, yeah, passion for them. I thought like, this is my band, the Pet Shop Boys. Sort of reaction to the sort of the more serious rock that my brother was like, you know, unleashing on me, of like older brother music of Pink Floyd and U2 and things like that. And I was like, I like the Pet Shop Boys. But I do think like the sort of the feeling of being like getting really into comics and really into music and stuff, it's like often tied together. Like they are like these sort of things that go together very well, because it's stuff for you when you're in your bedroom, which is where you know you're safe and you're kind of having your special like, you know, adventures of cultural adventures on your own, basically, where you're like, I'm such an interesting person with all my great comics,
yeah.
That I can't tell anyone at school about.
I'm becoming me,
yes,
in here,
exactly,
in this pupa,
yeah
of the teenage bedroom,
yeah. And now we're on the downslide, we're just trying to recreate that. So I think it's wonderful,
yeah.
Wonderful that you're in,
yeah,
this.
We are butterflies with battered wings.
Oh my god, yeah, like sort of
just desperately sticking our proboscises into the failing flowers of early autumn.
Right, yeah. So I think it's great that you're in biz. It's great that you and I are finally being published before our wings crumble.
Like,
yes. So
fucking hell. And yes, and there is no money in comics.
No, there is.
GeesonDoc.com. For Vi Comics and patreon.com/FraserGeesin to ameliorate the pain. Anything else?
I'm going to talk to you about a film, but let's get out of here, because I can't do that in the review universe, or can we?
No,
we can't. No, let's go. Come on.
No. All right. Let's have a
great time. We learned about British comics and American comics, and we learned about our past, and we learned about the future.
Comics can be Proustian too, not just cakes. Right.
So I'm not gonna wang on too long, because I can sense a tiredness in you. But I wanted to...
Sorry, I'm just going to sit up and that's become better. Animated.
Yes.
There we go.
That's much better. Actually, genuinely much better. Thank you.
Good, good.
So I've got a quick silence because the film has started. And I thought that it would be germane to this podcast because it's about comics and I don't like superhero films for the most part, especially not in the last, I don't know, 1,000 years that they've been being made. But the other day I was at home and I saw The Flash came onto one of the streaming channels, the much reviled and controversial Flash film, which came out and had this ridiculous like gestation where it was like there was all the controversies about Ezra Miller, and I'm not going to touch on those apart from just to sort of acknowledge that they are real and there, and I don't have any judgment and insight to say about it, but you know, there is all the controversies about Ezra Miller, which meant that it was very like a kind of hot potato, but they filmed the whole thing. It's the end of the Scott Snyder sort of run, really, but back when Scott Snyder's universe was potentially going to be...
You mean Zack Snyder?
Sorry, Zack Snyder. So when Zack Snyder's cinematic universe was still in play, The Flash was one of the films that was commissioned. Took a while to get made. Lots of different directors and things like that. I think Grant Morrison took a pass at a script at one point. Anyway, in the intervening time, Zack Snyder's cinematic universe was kind of KO'd and they kind of were like, yeah, no, that's happening. But the Flash film was still sort of 90% made. And so anyway, it was on the slates as kind of one of the final DC, Zack Snyder DC style universe before James Gunn's upcoming reinvention. And I think some people were thinking it was going to be like a Flashpoint sort of entry into the new universe. Anyway, yada yada, none of this is interesting. And obviously, yeah, the controversies around Ezra Miller meant that it was a bit like they couldn't promote it. Ezra Miller could not promote the film because of all the court case stuff. And there was lots of fan discourse about whether it was immoral to watch it and blah, blah, blah. And like lots of things. And then all these things kept coming out going, is The Flash actually the best superhero film ever? And like Stephen King came out and said, I've seen The Flash. It's amazing. There was this weird, like, obviously kind of funded, Warner Brothers funded, like, let's pay some people to say that The Flash is amazing. And that was really weird. So that made everyone kind of a bit like, this whiffs. And it came out and got pretty mediocre reviews, tanked pretty hard at the box office, and was considered by everybody to be largely a disappointing mess. And no one really liked it, apart from a few people who I respect on the internet who'd kind of shouted out and said actually they really liked it. Anyway, all that's a preamble to say I sat down and watched it the other day and it was a very, very, very unusual film. It's got one of the weirdest and most off-putting opening sequences where he saves a bunch of falling babies from an exploding hospital and is jumping around on bits of rubble sort of rescuing babies, and at one point he puts a baby into a microwave for safety and stuff, and it's all very like, this is strange. And the babies look really weird because the sort of CGI is really odd, so none of the babies look real. And they're trying very hard to give you this kind of sense of like how the Flash can do stuff and move around in like microseconds and do all this stuff. So all this rubble's falling and there's like dogs kind of going past. It's really odd. And I was like, as I was watching, I was like, this is an absolute car crash of a film already. This is like unbelievably. But then there was part of me going, but it's very weird. It's very weird. Like, and my little weird sense started tingling. I was like, well, this isn't how I feel normally when I'm watching these. There's just an innate sense of boredom that kicks in immediately. And then everyone starts quipping each other in a kind of amusing way. And you go, oh, God, I want to call up and die. And so that kind of happens. And then basically the film began to sort of unfold. And I just realized after I was like, I'm really enjoying this. This is like a really weird, like, and I was like, why is it good? I was like, because it's like a really weird comic. It feels like a really weird, like, it's got the energy of like a Flash comic where you're like, it isn't the Flash in so much as it doesn't feel like Wally West or Barry Allen, like in any way that you might know. But to be honest with you, I don't really have a sense of what they're like. They're just the Flash. It's not like I'm like, that's not my Flash. You know, I don't care that much. I've read some good Flash comics. I've read some boring ones.
They're a blank slate for fun ideas.
Yeah, people talk about Wally and Barry and it's like, yeah, if a writer's good, then the character's good. Anyway, but the Flash is fun. The Flash is a fun, he's also just a fun idea, like the idea of the super speed and stuff. And then they kind of lean into this kind of plot point where basically it's about Barry Allen trying to, first of all, he's sort of, his dad's in jail for apparently murdering his mum, but he knows his dad, he thinks his dad's innocent and all this stuff. But it's sort of fundamentally about him realizing, because he accidentally sort of taps into the Speed Force thing and realizes that he can kind of change, he can potentially change, go through time and stuff like this. And the Speed Force is manifested. The bit where he kind of starts realizing that he can see all the different sort of reality stuff is really trippy and very weird and very, very odd. Anyway, he ends up basically with a Flash of Two Worlds scenario where there's another Barry Allen. In a different world, he runs essentially into a different world, and then it's in that world that is where he meets Michael Keaton's Batman from Batman 1989, the Tim Burton one, which I am very suspect about that sort of thing normally, but it was incredibly exciting.
You felt the naughty universe touching.
I felt it, and I was happy because I love Michael Keaton so much. And it kind of feels like, oh, right, yeah, this sort of works and stuff. But it's also got this great thing where, like, Ezra Miller is playing two distinct versions of the Flash in there, of Barry Allen in this. And they are, it's remarkable, actually, because no one wanted to talk about Ezra Miller's performance because I think everyone felt a bit like it was hard to talk about. And also because I think some people find them off-putting. And they are like playing like quite a grating version in one version. And the other version is sort of not, you know, it's a bit neurotic. So, but what I realized is halfway through, I was like, I am totally buying that these are two different people. And that is really weird, like to do that, to basically act against yourself in a very, very, very convincing way with actual sort of subtle differences and a kind of believable dynamic. So that when they're like, there's bits where they're arguing with each other and you're like, this is kind of astonishing, actually. That's genuinely quite like impressive. Like you to just like lose that sort of sense of, anyway, it's a very sort of mannered and involved performance, but it's also like, kind of compelling. And ultimately, basically, it's a mess of a film. It's not perfect. It's too long. There's a whole bit with General Zod which is just pretty, you know, like, isn't
Zod's in it?
Zod, yeah, the Zod from Man of Steel's in it, but feels very sort of tacked on, that bit. It's got a Supergirl in it that looks like they've come straight out of a Frank Miller's Dark Knight 2. Like she's got extreme Frank Miller energy, which I was really enjoying. So it's like this kind of hodgepodge mess of stuff. But I just was like, this is just a kind of big, weird, messy, engaging film. And then right the way through, it's actually got this sort of, this quite emotional core. And I genuinely found that the ending, I think it ends on quite a mature note about stuff, about grief and acceptance and stuff. And I literally, for the first time in any of these films, I felt myself slightly welling up at the end. I was like, I'm genuinely quite moved by this. And I just kind of came out of it and was like, do you know what? I thought that was great. I really liked it. And I wouldn't recommend it to someone unless they understood like the energy I'm talking about and the caveats that you probably have to put yourself in. Like I think if you're going for a traditional three-act film, or a film that, you know, even just is kind of recognisably like a normal filmic experience, it isn't that, and it isn't perfect. And there are things that I think if you don't like it, I think the use of CGI and special effects has got like some real criticism about it. But I think it kind of starts to just have this really odd almost like psychedelic, vibrant weirdness that I found really much better than I expected. And yeah, I just came out of it being like, do you know what? That was actually great. And it was actually like reading a batshit Grant Morrison comic or a really weird. It was like it had similar sort of, yeah, Grant Morrison and a bit of. It felt the most Morrisonian of all the superhero films. And it also reminded me a bit of something like Dark Knight 2, which is like a kind of love it or hate it experience, but has it just a totally palpable energy of its own that you can kind of tap into and go, this feels like crazy golden age wild comics before all the kind of constipation creeps in and makes it all a bit like self-conscious and stuff. I kind of just really liked it, but yeah, I was very surprised at how much I enjoyed it.
like
genuinely. The last one I enjoyed as much as that was probably like going to see Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice, where it was the press screening and Henry Cavill's there and me and Lord Nunny Savage got drunk on cans of beer and just had a whale of a time at the absolute incomprehension of it all. And, you know, just came out being like, what on earth was happening? I kind of loved that. You know, it was the same sort of thing. I think The Flash is probably a better film, but it is that sort of thing of like, I don't mind these films being like making no sense or being like ridiculous or whatever. I just like them to be weird. I like them being weird because that's sort of what I want from my superhero stuff. It's just weirdness. I don't want it to be like slick and serviceable. That's just boring. That's always been boring in the comics, and it's really boring in the films. And it's just like everyone talking like a Joss Whedon cast off is really like annoying. I don't want to hear it anymore. I think it's a success. And I was a bit sad that I was like, yeah, that's like, you know, because by all accounts, the second Aquaman film's pretty fun, but everyone was like, no, thank you. I think the more like reviled they are, the more I'm drawn to them, basically. I kind of recommend it. I think, you know, and if any listener watches it and hates it, then I'm sorry. I cannot say that it's
a likelihood of me watching.
Oh, you won't watch it. It's not for you to watch it. No. Don't worry. I know you won't.
I've been watching a bit of Hartnell Doctor Who.
Oh, that's nice.
I've been enjoying that as a nice gentle thing to have on.
Yeah, like
bit of Tomb of the Cybermen, bit of I'm very very slowly working my way through the final Hartnell. I've always been a bit interested in Hartnell because there's less existing of Hartnell.
I was talking,
War Games, his last thing, which introduces lots of sort of Gallifrey lore, I understand. But yeah, I'm a sort of three episodes into that, and it's like, oh, it's all filmed round here.
Right.
Filmed like Ditchling around where stuff. I live.
I was
goes over to Cookmere Haven.
Talking to
sort of thing. I noticed the some of the geographical features, and I was like, I know that river.
Yeah. Well, weirdly, in the Flash, there's a sequence where they're notionally out on the street in, I suppose, Gotham or Keystone City or wherever it is they are, and the two Barrys are talking to each other, and I was like, that's just outside my office. And they film a lot of stuff around there because they've got Smithfield's Market.
Yeah, it's where Sherlock Holmes started.
Yeah, loads of stuff there. But I had no idea why they'd filmed that bits of the... So it's like, it's actually in one bit, it's just, there is just like the business units that sit underneath some of Smithfield's Market. And the cafe that I go to for my lunch, they're just like pretty much outside it. And I was like, weird. I was already enjoying this. And now they're literally outside my office. I was going to say, like, I was talking to Rory about Hartnell, Doctor Who, because he was saying he'd never really watched it and he totally got it. He was like, watching Hartnell, you're like, oh, the building blocks are all just here from the start. It's like really sort of.
Did I say Hartnell? Because I meant Troughton.
Oh, Troughton.
I meant Patrick Troughton.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, but I've been watching
a bit of both.
I've never watched the Troughton ones. His eyebrows always scared me as a kid. Just a very strange looking man. Great, like use of just weird old blokes. God, I love Doctor. Yes. All right. Well, look, anything else that we need to talk about? Is there anything we need to talk about?
I mean, you could if there's a podcast called Comfort Blanket, which is Joel Morris, who's also written a really good book about comedy and why it matters, called Be Funny or Die, which I would recommend. It is both, it has both brevity and length.
Right. Joel Morris, I recognise the name.
Yeah, he's a comedy writer. Right. He's done lots of stuff with Charlie Brooker. It's very good. And he does various podcasts, but he does one called Comfort Blanket, where you get someone to he gets someone in to talk about stuff. And he has, fucking hell, who's the guy who wrote the KLF book?
John Higgs.
I saw John Higgs and I said, sorry to bother you, but I like your books.
Hmm.
And he said, that's all right. That's good bothering. he was at the same Simon Munnery gig that I went to.
Of course he was.
Which had a sort of a vaguely... it had a bit about Jerusalem in it. So him being a Blake guy was there. He talks about old Doctor Who in it, and he talks about it really well.
Right.
And it wasn't really created by anyone.
Right.
It just sort of came into being. It was right. Like, you know, someone had an idea, maybe we should do something along these lines. And someone else went, oh yeah, let's do this. And someone else like made some weird noises.
Right.
And then like, you know, some people left and some other people came in. And just like Doctor Who as modern myth. A really good listen. I would recommend John Higgs on Comfort Blanket. And I would also recommend Joel Morris's book, Be Funny or Die. And I would also recommend tuning in to Dan and Fraser's Starlight Adventures, which will be we will get on top of that soon. But let's face it, I will get on top of that soon once I've finished what I'm currently working on my Patreon, patreon.com/FraserGeeson. And I think that's all the admin, really.
I don't think I have. I do have a a recommend. Lord Nunn Eaton Savage put me onto something on. I can't remember it. Can't remember the name of it, so I'm not going to bother. I don't. It's a really good thing.
Oh, that sounds really good.
It's a really good thing, but because I can't access like some messages on my phone while I'm talking to you, I can't look it up. But anyway, it's a good thing on YouTube. They're one of those like those video essays that people do where they go through stuff. YouTube's quite good. I haven't really sort of paid too much attention to it because I tend to sort of do more like podcasts. But actually, because it suits walking around and stuff. But where people are sort of using like just clips and doing these kind of visual essays and like, so this is just someone who's there. They're kind of going through, they take a theme like all the bad post Indiana Jones ripoff films of the 80s.
Oh my
and
God,
they'll just
yeah.
collate all these clips and put it together. And it's very funnily done, but it's also really informative. And they'll do that, but then they'll do it with like post Exorcist films or post, you know, like, the films that kind of spin out of The Karate Kid or whatever, you know, it'll just take a film and be like, and then all the kind of bonkers independent sort of studios and exploitation versions kind of crop up and they just do these kind of pop culture. Anyway, it's really good. They're like an hour long and it's like, this is a really good use of clips and audio and time and funniness and like, yeah, it's like a really like holistic, complete thing. If only I can remember the name. Like, that would definitely help.
This reminds me of something. oh, we really need to stop podcasting. But Douglas Noble pointed out a, I guess because Alan Quatermain is in public domain now.
Oh, yes.
Did you look at that?
Yes.
That was insane. It's called something like Alan Quatermain and the and the and the and the Monkey of Destiny or something, or the Dinner of Destiny, or and it is it's just some blokes making a film. It's on Amazon Prime. Can you find out what it's called?
Yeah, I'll do.
Because I sort of I have no intention of watching it, but I had a look at it and I skipped through it and I thought,
Alan Quatermain and the Spear of Destiny. Embark on a thrilling adventure with Alan Quatermain, the legendary explorer who inspired the iconic character of Indiana Jones. Quatermain leads a team to stop a clandestine organization from reviving an ancient evil. Though through forgotten tombs and deadly jungles, they face deadly traps and Nazi zombies in an epic battle for humanity's fate.
No, not through deadly tombs
no.
and forgotten jungles. Through the same room in an office building with different pictures on the wall. That sometimes they'll have a curtain up in the background. And sometimes they go out in the corridor as well for a bit of excitement. And it is like it's the lowest strata of filmmaking that you can possibly
But they've made a whole film.
You can somehow get this up on Amazon Prime, and presumably people are going to watch it. Presumably most people are watching it because it's terrible. And that, like, everybody's, I looked briefly, at the IMDb, or no, that was it. As I was watching it, you know, there's got that thing on Amazon Prime where it comes up with, like, the actors and, like, who's in this scene.
Yeah. Like, where else?
Like, there's a bunch of brothers in there. Like, you know, it's like, oh, these guys look the same. It's always clearly just someone and their mates. Making an Alan Quatermain film with the most incredibly limited resources, and I don't want to watch it, but there was something I always think, like I started doing stand up because I saw people thinking, well, I could fucking obviously do better than that.
Yeah.
and like seeing shit black and white comics, you know, in the 80s, like that was like, oh, like mate, you know, I could maybe one day do that. I could do that. I could maybe even do better than that. And there is something really, really empowering about fucking shit.
But also, like, I do love that, you know, I suppose we used to, like, when you used to get, like, stoned and watch stuff like that, you'd kind of collectively watch it because you kind of couldn't believe how bad it is. And
yeah.
So the actual ability to sort of sit through something like that is quite limited. But it's got that pure energy where you know that if you got the right into the right state of mind, it'd just be incredible watching that. It'd just be incredible. You know what I mean? But I was looking at some clips of it and just like, oh my God, this is like the lowest of the low. It is like unbelievable. Mm. It's probably like, here's the guy who's the foreign guy with the fez. And it's just another another one of their mates in an
office
with a fez on. Just a white bloke with a fez on.
And everyone said, my friend, I cannot give you. just the way everything is delivered. I don't think there's a single actor in there.
Or if there is, they're just people. I tell you what, I watched a very good
They all look like painter and decorators.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they look like. All right, we'll make a film, and we can paint the set. We can only paint it white, but we can paint the set and act in your film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's definitely got like proper handyman energy from the main actors. I found that, by the way, I just want to say I have found, because I like to shout it out, the thing that I was talking about is called The Bad Movie Bible on YouTube, and their series is called Borrowing Blockbusters. So it'll be like the best, worst and weirdest Indiana Jones knockoffs, or they've got Shinobi Geddon, the 1980s ninja craze, like the Alien knockoffs. Basically, it doesn't look like it's going to be really good, but it's all really, really well done and very, very entertaining. So yeah, that's what that's called. Just what you were talking about with the making films thing, that reminds me, there's another documentary that's genuinely very good on there, on Prime at the moment, about Al Adamson, who is like a sort of B movie auteur of like super cheap kind of exploitation ripoff films from the 70s, really. And it's like half a really charming story of this absolute shyster and his kind of can-do energy, and the fact that it's just, he gets this troop of people and makes these kind of occasionally transcendent, like, but largely utterly awful, trashy exploitation movies. It's just, if you look up Al Adamson on Prime, yeah, I think it's called the Strange Life and Grisly Death or something of Al Adamson, because the spoilers. Second half of it is, well, it's in the title of the film. But anyway, he's quite renowned because he's the end of his life is not great, and it's weird. It's sort of the bit of it where they go, oh, this bit isn't as fun. It's more fun when it's all about the filmmaking. But one of the things that I loved about it was that the trick that him and his producer would do is they'd film like a biker movie, and it'd be like, they filmed this Western, and then it was like, no one's interested in this. And then it's like, well, go-go dancing's popular. So they filmed some go-go dancing sequences, put it in it, retool it, make it, call it like Go-Go Girls of the Western Frontier. And then we're like, that didn't work either. And we're like, well, biker films are popular. And so they just shoot some biker shit, re-release it, and call it like Hell's Sexy Go-Go Western bike, or whatever. And they just re-release films about four times by just putting new bits in. And so you'd just be going to this drive-in movies and be like, I've seen this, but it had a totally different title. It's just amazing, like amazing sort of fine line between absolute like rip-off merchants and genuine insane creativity, by the way that they'd actually kind of do that. And and like Russ Tamblyn's in like this biker movie called Satan's Servants, which looks amazing, and he's kind of basically saying at that point he's in it, he'd given up acting and was just being a kind of artist poet guy. And then they just said, like, this Al Adamson was just constantly trying to get people from the films he'd like enjoyed as a kid into his film. So he had all these like washed up old actors like David Carradine and Lon Chaney when they're like really like about to die in these strange films. Anyway, Russ Tamblyn's like, sure, I'll do it. He just wants some money to carry on being a... So he's like, no one will ever see this. It's fine. And then he kind of gets really into like the fact that the guy's just like... he basically says, can I just do my own script? I don't want to do your script. And so he's just doing all these kind of Russ Tamblyn kind of... It's like the proto sort of David Lynch Russ Tamblyn is in the Al Adamson ones, where it's like he's got this really weird energy and he's just kind of like... And the biker movie he's in just looks absolutely wicked. It's like, I want to see that so badly. So I recommend that. That's really good. And that's quite short. That's only like 80 minutes. So you might be able to watch that one. But be warned, Gary Lactus, it's got quite a lot of boobs in it. So.
Oh, heaven forbid.
And I'm not saying you're a prude, but you may not want your cats watching.
Boobies are rudies.
They are. That's true. Yeah, that's true. So that's recommended. Right, that is it, though. We've been talking for a long time.
It really is. This has been a lot of pent-up silence.
So we should say, we should say that like we basically are kind of, our regular thing is to do Starlight because that's just what we've got more energy and capacity for. But we both had this urge to just do a silence, and I think that's how it will be. Like we're not counting out doing silence. It's just can't commit to its regularity. So they'll just pop up, and hopefully that's a treat for people when we're kind of inspired to talk about it. Because it's much nicer to talk about stuff when we're inspired to do so. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When we've had time to consume, when we've had time to have some experiences,
that aren't just the
everyday shit that grinds us down.
Yeah, just talking about
tired
cooking meals for our children.
Yeah. There's 315 of them now.
Yeah.
Probably about, 290 of them can be accessed through our Patreon, should you wish to go there. And, it's not much. Just do it once, get it all, and fuck off again. Or not. Or become regular, enjoymentizers of patreon.com/silence. All of that sort of stuff that we normally say. I am tired now.
Mm.
And, when you told me to buck my ideas up, I did.
But now they're unbucking again.
Yeah. It's break time now, sir, and I need a wee. So.
Okay then. Should we say? How do we say that we get out of here?
Well, should we say that until next time?
Yes.
When you, the dear listener, join us, the dear us, next time, once again, for another thrilling session of remembering things and talking about things that may have happened reasonably recently to us in our lives, to enrich your lives forever going forward into the future, looking backwards, as we once again enjoy another Gary Lactus and the Beast Must Die, as they profess to you for your enjoyments, another
silence! Oof! Right in the puddings.